Hello and welcome to Davos Talks with PwC, live at the World Economic Forum, and also coming to you from the Romeo and Juliet room at the Belvedere Hotel. Each day we'll be bringing you thought-provoking discussions with leading executives, sharing their expert insights into the big global industry trends. I'm Juliet Foster, and today I'm joined by PwC's Global Innovation and Sustainability Leader, Celine Hawaya. And also I'm joined by Lucas Jopper. Lucas is the Chief Environmental Officer of Microsoft. So thank you both for joining us today. You're very busy people, so it's great that you managed to take the time out. Thank you. And Celine, I want to start with you because climate change is named as the biggest global threat in this year's World Economic Forum Global Risk Report. So why is this now the big issue for business?
Well, actually, environment appears in all of the top five of the risks this year in the Global Risk Report, and climate change for the first time is number one. So that's kind of outstanding in terms of what we've seen in the past. I mean, really, the science is clear now, and it's actually become quite well understood. Scientists have said very clearly we need to not go beyond 1.5 degrees of global warming, otherwise we get dangerous impacts of climate change. We're beyond 1.1 degrees now. We'll reach 1.5 degrees by 2030, end of this decade, if we carry on with current emissions. To actually avoid dangerous climate change and avoid exceeding that, we need to halve global emissions by 2030. And we need to get to a net zero, so-called net zero economy by 2050. These are a lot of numbers, right? But this is a massive transformation of every sector of the economy. Just to put it into context, the rate we decarbonized the economy this past year was 1.6%. We actually increased global emissions by 2%. We've always been increasing. 2020 is the inflection point where we need to start decreasing emissions. We don't just have to decrease, we have to halve global emissions by 2030. So it's rapid transformation now of every sector economy in the next 10 years, which is in effect two business cycles. Whether you're in energy, whether you're in agriculture, whether you're in manufacturing, construction, cement, steelworks, all those industries, a rapid transformation. This is a big disruption issue for business. And it's not just science that's kind of understanding this fact. From a government perspective, obviously, we have the Global Climate Deal. Even more ambitious than that, we now have 80 governments that have agreed to the net zero target for 2050. And when you have governments agreeing to that, you have a whole slew of regulation that comes. So we're expecting to see big changes in terms of needing to have reforming of subsidies, reforming of tax structures, carbon pricing regimes, bans and phase outs, essentially moving away from a fossil fuel economy towards a cleaner economy, lots of new incentive structures, more things like mandatory environmental, social and governance regulation and climate risk disclosure. So all of these changes in regulations creates a transition risk for businesses, as well as the physical risk from the impacts of climate change.
Right, so there's lots to navigate in that business landscape. And look, Lucas, what's come out of that, apart from the numbers, which are pretty overwhelming, is the phrase disruption and inflection point. As Celine pointed out, the science in all of this is quite extraordinary. So what is it in climate change that gives you sleepless nights as a big leader in one of the world's biggest companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think Celine hit all the high points. I think, you know, everybody's working on this topic now with an extreme sense of urgency because we're rapidly depleting our carbon budget. You know, we know two things. If we exceed 1.5, the negative impacts on Earth's environment and economy is exponentially catastrophic. So we know we need to slow down our carbon emissions. We need to drop to net zero, and we know that we have a decade to do that. What keeps me up at night is, you know, the science that motivates us to do that is quite clear. But so much of that is physics-based, and just the physics-based science alone is motivating this extreme action. What keeps me up at night is that we still completely do not understand the biology. And so I think that the decade to deliver, the decade to action is probably a very liberal estimate amount of the amount of time that we have to act, because while we understand the physical feedback loops of our climate systems, we do not even come close to understanding the full biophysical feedback loops. And I think that there's still some pretty significant surprises ahead of
us. So more discoveries. And let's stay with you, Lucas, because Microsoft has been responding, because your company made the headlines last week with a big, ambitious new commitment on climate change. 2030 was your deadline in regards to becoming carbon negative. So tell us more about it.
So as you said, Microsoft stepped back, asked where we were as a company. We'd been carbon neutral since 2012. We'd been focusing on and investing in sustainability for a long time. But we really went back and started reading all of the new reports, looking at where we were, and asking ourselves if what we were doing was enough. And I think in the space of sustainability, the answer to that is always no, right? Mm-hmm. You can never do enough to act. But what we saw was a gap between our corporate actions and what the best available science says that we needed to be doing. What the best available science says that we need to be doing is drastically reducing our carbon emissions by 2030 as societally, and then moving towards a net zero carbon economy by 2050. Well, if you're a self-aware corporation, like I hope Microsoft is, you realize that that is on average we need to do those things. Some organizations aren't going to be able to do as much as others. And so we believe that those companies that have more should do more. And Microsoft's been fortunate to be in a position to really go above and beyond and say, for some companies like Microsoft that have the resources, we need to go below zero, right? Mm. We need to move the time post back or up, I guess. We need to do things bigger and we need to do things faster. And that's what the announcement was all about.
Well, let's focus on that deadline of 2030, because as we've agreed, the science is changeable. The neglected side of the science was biology. Given all these factors, why set 2030? And are you really confident that that deadline is attainable, that you can, in fact, be carbon neutral or a carbon eradicator?
Right. 2030 was chosen by Microsoft because of two things. First, we know that the time horizon that we have to act is short. I believe it's much shorter than the world is talking about. And so to set a 2030 goal to be negative, I think, is an imperative that many companies and countries should be thinking about. It was also set because the world is talking about 2050. Well, we are also talking about 2050. But the difference that of what we're doing between 2030 and 2050 is that in those 20 years, what we'll be doing is, while we're continuing to be a carbon negative company, we're also going to go beyond that and remove from the atmosphere an equal amount of carbon that Microsoft has cumulatively emitted since our founding in 1975. And I think that that's a really important point for organizations to step back and ask about what their historical responsibility is to the problems that we have today.
Okay, so Celine, from your point of view, this is music to your ears, because here's a company doing what they need to be doing to actually set a trail here for others. And of course, you work with business leaders across a vast spectrum of industries. So what are the key actions that they need to take? Because they can't all respond to this in the way that Microsoft is. They may not have the resources. And of course, some of them may feel, well, we don't need to board the train just yet.
Yeah. Well, two business cycles is not a long time. I think, we all know how quickly 10 years actually can go. The starting point for any business is to set that net zero target. That's the kind of foundational target that governments are now mobilizing around, businesses are, investors are. There's an increasing group of shareholders that have come together, something like 34 trillion already assets under management of shareholders who are putting pressures on boards, on governments who have agreed to decarbonize their portfolios. So in terms of the first step is to set that target, to have that leadership buy-in, that leadership accountability. The interesting thing about Microsoft's commitment, and this is also in the definition of net zero itself, it's not just about making your operations carbon neutral. It's not just about, even better than that, making your supply chain carbon neutral. Actually, the biggest impact a company like Microsoft can have, and a company like ours at PwC can have, is we service a huge amount of clients and help them change and help them transform and help them be fit for the future, right? So it's actually, for our kind of organizations, it's actually about how, through our products and services, we help clients across industry get ready and transform and transition to that future. And at the same time, it's also about investments, right? So Microsoft has investments, you know, banks have investments. So again, it's not just operations, it's not just supply chains, it's the front end of your business, products and services and operations. So starting point net zero commitment, then you get the climate governance in place, it's board level accountability. Then you put in place, you do the materiality assessment. What's the financial materiality of climate risk, the transition risks, including market, regulatory risk, reputation risk, the physical risk to your business? Once you've got that materiality assessment, your business case, you then go on to strategy. How does that impact your products and service offerings in the future, in different geographies, in different market lines? You put in place the transformation program to adapt to that, because again, we have 10 years to transform business to get ready for the net zero economy.
Okay, and Lucas, in terms of the technology on this, because obviously that's a key component, so where does the technology fit in? Are there examples where technology is doing the job in helping companies such as yours to reach those carbon targets?
There's about a million and more ways that technology can help. I think we've seen it both in, you know, for instance, the instrumentation of our own buildings, allowing us to reduce, energy consumption. We've seen it in the deployment of our artificial intelligence solutions and offerings. One of my favorite examples is with a small startup called Sylvia Terra, a really small startup that's using Microsoft's AI technologies to help us better understand the carbon sequestration potential of the forests in the United States and ultimately beyond. Using machine learning and satellite imagery, Sylvia Terra has been able to count and map out every single tree in the United States, which seems like basic information that we'd all have access to, but we don't. And counted almost 100 billion trees.
100 billion trees.
100 billion trees. And what's so fantastic is once you have that just base level of information, you can do all sorts of things. So one of the things that Sylvia Terra did was they partnered with the Nature Conservancy to bring new landowners into carbon offset markets, so that companies like Microsoft can purchase from them. The vast majority of forests and potential carbon offsets are owned by people with small land holdings. And it's through scalable applications of technologies like machine learning that we're going to be able to lower the cost of people participating in carbon removal markets. And we're going to be able to increase the scale at which people are able to participate.
So it's a shared responsibility. Yeah. It doesn't just rest on corporate shoulders. Everybody can get involved in this.
Yeah. I mean, just to build on a technology point, we're at Davos. So in Davos, the phrasing fourth industrial revolution is used a lot here. And, you know, we're in the fastest technology revolution we've ever had. AI, Lucas mentioned, we have blockchain, we have advanced materials, we have biotechnology. It's that whole suite of technologies that we need to transform our sectors. And it's a fantastic opportunity to ride that technological innovation to make this challenge of transforming the economy possible. Just take energy, right? In the past, our energy grids were traditional transition distribution grids, centralized grids. The future of the energy grid is decentralized, decarbonized, and digitized. You need machine learning in that. You need blockchain in that. You need Internet of Things in that, et cetera. And you need kind of advanced materials for batteries and kind of new battery models as well. So absolutely, it's key to getting there.
Okay, let's tie this off with the final word really from both of you, because look, we are moving into this new decade. What is your messages for businesses around the world who will be listening to this, what you have to say? They're hanging on your words. What are you going to tell them?
Well, I would say we're at the World Economic Forum, and the middle word there, economy, is critical, right? And what businesses need to understand is that a failure to act on climate is going to be catastrophic for the economy, and proactive action on climate is going to be positive for the economy, and it's going to be positive for individual businesses. We commissioned a report from PwC UK that showed exactly that, showed these triple bottom line wins of investing in technology solutions, seeing, of course, CO2 emission reductions, but also GDP growth, significant GDP growth, and significant job growth. We see that regulations are coming. We see that economic and environmental catastrophe is coming if we don't act. But there's this completely positive opposite side, which is that if we do act, if we do invest, significant positive returns are going to come our way.
Okay, and Celine.
I mean, I just echo everything Lucas just said. I mean, it is the challenge of our generation now, the next 10 years, but it's one we have to tackle to be here in the future, to be fit for the future, to have a future, to have a future that's viable from a business perspective and a kind of economic perspective. So act now. I think the science is clear. Governments are sending clear signals. Investors are increasingly kind of coming together to send clear signals. There's already 180 big global companies committed to net zero targets. That's increased from pretty much zero last year. So there's a big movement underway, and it's time to kind of get on and get on with understanding what that means for you and getting ready for the future.
Okay, we have to leave it there. But Celine and Lucas, thank you so much for joining me to discuss the climate crisis that we face and also sharing your insights on how we can prepare, adapt, and work towards a cleaner and safer future. But that is it for now. Join me tomorrow when I will be discussing upskilling alongside PwC's joint global leader of people and organisation, Carol Stubbings, and Linda Grattan. She is Professor of Management Practice at the London Business School. That's all from me. Goodbye.